We have joining us right now on the phone line is the one and only Dave Wedge. And we're going to talk with him. We're going to chat with him about a whole bunch of things. Dave, what's going on?
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. Well, I'm not, I'm doing better than the Brockton Boxers are right now.
Yeah, I was sorry to see they weren't able to pull that one out. But it was a great season for, Coach Colombo and the guys. And hopefully some of those kids will go on to play some college football somewhere and, go to college and look back on a great season. They started off pretty rough and didn't look like they were going anywhere, and then they really turned on, and, it was a great year for them,
Yeah.
Well, but it's tough to beat, those teams like St. John's Prep. Those teams are pretty stacked these days,
Well, here's the thing, though. It's just the whole, I don't know if you follow it or not, but the whole MIAA thing is going to change next year. You're not going to have so many Super Bowls. I think it's just going to be a mere 6 Super Bowls.
Mm. So I found it kind of crazy this year. You've got Everett playing Bridgewater Rainham.
Yep.
I'm sorry, playing Barnstable in the 1A Super Bowl, and then Brockton and St. John's Prep in the Division 1 Super Bowl. Everett should definitely be, and Barnstable should both be in the same division with those two schools.
Sure.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
and even a school like, a school like Marshfield's a big school, and Weymouth, and, the schools in Newton. A lot of these schools are big schools now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We'll see what happens. I hope they fix it and make it better, I hope.
Well, speaking of making things better, I know that part of your beat is kind of following what's going on up at Boston City Hall and Mayor Tom Menino. And
yep.
You and I are going to, get into what's going on with Mayor Menino. He hasn't he hasn't had the top health lately, has he?
No, he's had a rough ride. He's been in the hospital since October 26th when he was on a trip with his wife to Italy, and he came down with a flu, and he got on a plane to come back early, and they basically were trying to get back before the hurricane came in, Hurricane Sandy, and on the long flight home, he developed some sort of blood clot, was hospitalized, and he's been there ever since. Since then, he's had like a compression fracture in his back, which is apparently something related to, being bedridden for a while. And since then, now they've diagnosed him with type 2 diabetes. So he's got a lot going on. I was able to go in and interview him last week with a reporter from the Globe and Susan Warnick from Channel 5. And we sat down with him for about 20 minutes, and he was tired and obviously not well, and he's certainly not dying. There's people out there speculating that maybe he's got cancer, or maybe he's dying or something like that. And he didn't seem like someone who's dying, but he definitely didn't seem like someone who was ready to jump into running around the city the way he's known to do. So it's a tough situation for me, and it's just the latest. He's been sick a lot over the past, 5-6 years.
Well, the folks at the desk or the page editors kind of deemed that article that Mayor Menino was emotional in that first interview.
Yeah, he was. He was pretty emotional, and at one point, Susan Warnick, was filmed for TV. She asked him, is there anything you want to say to the people of Boston? And he kind of turned emotional, and I don't want to say he was, teared up, but he was clearly somber. And he said, this is hard for me to do. And he said, but, I just want to let people know, just because I'm down, I'm not out. And I want to remind everyone, have a great holiday. It's a time for giving. And I just want to say thank you to all the people in Boston. So it was kind of a poignant moment there. And, I left there a little bit melancholy because I've been covering, I've been at the Herald now for 13 years. And
wow.
I've been covering the mayor for a long time. And I know him pretty well. And, I've been at City Hall now for couple of years, and I was there for a couple of years a few years ago, and so I've spent a lot of time with him, and I've seen how hard he works and how much he puts into it and how robust and vibrant and how full of life he is. And to see him sitting in a hospital chair on the sidelines and not himself, it was a little bit of a bummer for me.
Dave, has the mayor been essentially still being the mayor while he's been in the hospital, or has someone else taken over his duties?
Well, he's got all his department heads that, handle the DPW guy, he takes care of the roads, and the building guy takes care of all the city buildings, and, so on and so forth. But he there's a lot of stuff. He's kept in the loop, I'm told. He has daily briefings with all his department heads and his cabinet. You know, Ed Davis and the police chief and the fire commissioner. You know, Rod Frazier are both in regular contact with him, I guess. And he's still signing the things he needs to sign and making the decisions he needs to make. But that said, you know, it's impossible for me to be as engaged as he would be were he in City Hall all day. And, you know, but he's, you know, the city's doing fine and they assure us that everything's okay and there's no need for him to take an actual leave and put the city council president in charge.
What would happen? Dave, how long is his term? When is this particular term up, and do you see him running again?
He wouldn't say. You know, it's 4 years, they're 4-year terms. He's up for re-election in November, so his term ends next year, and December 31st next year, or January 3rd, or whenever the inauguration is. But, yeah, there's a city election next year in November, and as of right now, there's only one person who's announced and said they're running, a guy named Will Dorchina, who's actually the brother of the Dorchester State Rep, Linda Dorchina Forey. And he's like an activist type of guy, and he ran for city council last time around, last year. But he's the only one that's announced so far, and the mayor hasn't said whether or not he's running for re-election. But, you know, certainly, unless he gets drastically better, you know, the guy that I saw couldn't run again. But, you know, if he gets better, I'm sure he can. You know, so we'll see what happens.
How important would it be for him to be to continue to be mayor, especially with the big thing that's going on in the city? When we talk our next subject, casinos, I would think that you want a guy like, you know, Mayor Menino at the helm of whatever's going to happen if a casino does come somewhere in the Boston area.
Well, certainly, you know, development has been one of his strong suits. I mean, just take a look at the Seaport. You know, that's a lot of that was orchestrated by his administration, you know, and that's now not only the hottest neighborhood in the city, but it's one of the neighborhoods in the entire country. And certainly it's got some of the most coveted real estate on the entire Eastern Seaboard.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that, I mean, you remember, Kevin, back when the Bank of America Pavilion first opened,
yep.
And all that was down there was a bunch of fisheries and the Harpoon Brewery,
yep.
And the Bank of America Pavilion, and it was a wasteland, and an industrial wasteland, literally.
You turned it around.
And now the Vertex is building a beautiful new headquarters there. All those restaurants, all those bars, and you know, there's new offices going up and new residences, and it's a new neighborhood. So that's the kind of stuff that he's really has been a feather in his cap, and certainly the casino would be something that you know, he'd obviously like to see through.
And there's also rumors that someday City Hall could end up down there as well.
Yeah, but now I think that ship may have sailed because. You know, the land, there's not much land left down there that's not either in development or slated for development.
Yeah, so. You know, it's interesting because when that was, as it's developing, and thanks to the mayor for doing this, you're right, the land's being eaten up so quickly because it's extremely coveted, and that's and it has become an extremely popular place.
I mean, they're even moving the Our Lady of the Voyage. They're moving that little chapel that's down there right across from the federal courthouse. It's been there for, you know, I'm not sure how many years, but several decades. And, you know, they're moving that because they're developing that giant parking lot right there. And pretty much everything down there is under development. And I should add, you know, that's where the Herald is now. We're down there.
Mm.
And, you know, we moved from the south end over to there, and we moved there precisely because it is, you know, a great neighborhood. And it's an up-and-coming neighborhood, and it's the hottest neighborhood in the city.
I have to ask you, and that is, you know, we're talking about developing things. What's the chances that we see something at Suffolk Downs or we see something in Everett? Do we see something? Do we see the state, the casino, you know, this board get its acting gear and decide on something, or is the process too slow?
Well, the heat's being turned up, you know, partially by us at the Herald and some of our reporting, and also by, you know, folks that are watching this thing unfold and people that have a direct stake in it. And you know, just experts that have followed the casino industry since you know, Massachusetts first proposed it 20 years ago. It's a slow process, and it doesn't seem to be showing any signs of moving any faster, despite the criticism. Suffolk Downs, I still think, is the odds-on favorite to get that single Boston casino license. But this proposal by Steve Wynn and Everett, just by the nature of Steve Wynn being involved, is going to be a major player. And, you know, it's going to depend on really who comes to the commission with the best plan. The concern over there, obviously, is traffic and access. How are you, you know, they're talking about building an off-ramp off of Interstate 93 to get to this property in Everett, which is basically right along the Mystic River on Route 99. I mean, it's as close to Boston as you can get while still being in Everett. And, you know, to get an off-ramp off of I-93, if that's a contingency for that casino, we won't see that thing open until 2020. To get through all the federal and state approvals to build a new off-ramp, as anyone knows from Route 24 or Route 3, it can take 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it appears when you were talking with the mayor that first time out, it seemed to, did you have a chance to talk with him about his frustration with going on with the casino approval process? Because it seems as though that you were able to talk with him about that, and he seemed to provide some frustration on that particular issue.
Yeah, he talked a little bit about it and said that he'd like to see him get going, and he, you know, he's not too happy that they, you know, the pace they're going at. And he also talked about Steve Wynn. He doesn't seem to be a big fan of Steve Wynn. You know, made a crack about him, you know, sticking his nose in this thing. And you know, the mayor's been out front. He wants it for Suffolk Downs. And, you know, in his favor, it certainly seems to be a great location. I mean, you've got a racetrack there. You've got legalized gambling already going on there. If you look around the country where they're putting expanded gaming in almost every other state, it's going to racetracks. And the reason why is because the industry is hurting and the infrastructure is already there. You look at Suffolk Downs, you know, there'll be some traffic issues that they got to deal with Paul Circle and Route 1A and some of that stuff. But generally, everything you need is right there, you know, and it's not right in the downtown, but it's still in Boston proper. So Boston's going to get the tax revenue. And, you know, that's a win-win in a lot of people's eyes.
Any other threats to the Everett or the city, you know, Suffolk Downs? Is there a possibility we might see something up in New Hampshire or maybe out in Springfield, or are those kind of pending?
No, well, those are all happening. You know, Springfield's going to get its own license, and there's, you know, that out there is far more competitive than it is here in Boston.
Right.
In Springfield, they've got there's two proposals now for Springfield. One company just pulled out, Ameristar, and then you've got a proposal for Palmer, which is right near Springfield, which is Mohegan Sun, and now you've got two proposals for Holyoke, which Holyoke was off the radar for a while, but now they're back on because the mayor out there flip-flopped and said, when he ran for mayor, he said, "I don't want any gaming," and now he's in office, and he said, "Okay, we'll do gaming." Mm. And so now you've got at least five players out there for that license. And then New Hampshire, you mentioned, New Hampshire, there's a new governor there that takes office in January. She's already said she's pro-gaming, and she wants to make one of the first orders of her business to legalize a casino at Rockingham Park, which is in Salem, right over the line.
I know it very well. I'm there.
Yeah, if they do that, that'll be open probably by the... If they get that passed, New Hampshire's historically, with their part-time legislature, gets legislation passed pretty quick, a lot faster than we do. They'll get that passed, and they'll be up and running with slot machines and table games by the end of the year. Next year is my prediction if they pass it. It'll take them 6 months to get open.
What kind of a challenge does that bring to Massachusetts? If you have, you know, folks to your north, you know, in New Hampshire, you got stuff going down in Rhode Island and Connecticut, how much more competitive does it make, you know, does it make it here in the state to
Maine as well?
To keep dollars in this state?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, let's not forget Twin River has been a racino down there in Rhode Island for, you know, 5 to 7 years, and they just approved a full casino there in November. So that's going to be up and running, full casino within months. So now you've got New Hampshire, you've got Rhode Island, you've got two casinos in Maine, and possibly, you know, in Springfield and obviously Connecticut. I think what it does is we're not going to beat any of these other states to the punch. We've already lost that. We've already lost to New Hampshire, even though they haven't even approved it yet. Once they approve it, we've already lost. We can't match that timeline because of the construction delays and all that stuff. But What I think it does is it puts a major burden on Massachusetts to make better facilities and to make the best ones on in the Northeast, to make them destination casinos. And that's really going to be where the pressure comes on the developers. And, you know, that's where a guy like Steve Wynn looks pretty good. And Caesars over there at Suffolk Downs, they built some of the, you know, most opulent, beautiful casinos in the world. And that's what it's going to take to reclaim those dollars. They're going to have to be better than all the other ones.
How about this particular, you know, the state gaming board and what it's costing to run that board and the money that they're spending? Has there been any complaints that this could cost the taxpayers some big money down the road?
Yeah, well, I had a story on Saturday. There was a study done that came out in October by a consultant hired by the state that took a look at that exact issue. And what they found was that the commission's going to be running at a deficit of $1 million next year.
Wow.
And that's basically because they don't have, you know, they got a $15 million expenditure from the state, appropriation from the state, went to get the commission off the ground and running. Now, they've already been in operation a year. They've got their hiring. They got their employees. But there's no revenue coming in. All they've gotten so far is $300,000-$400,000 fees from license applicants. The longer the delay goes on, there's no revenue coming in. So this consultant says by 2015, the deficit could be at $12 million, and then 2016 it could be $20 million. Those are fiscal years, so actually you're talking 2014 and 2015. So, and the consultant actually recommends that the board goes to the legislature and ask for an appropriation for more money to keep the board going. Now, the commission, in their defense, says, well, that's just a worst-case scenario, and, you know, we expect that once we issue a license, we're going to be getting plenty of revenue in. And those licenses, the cost is going to be $85 million. Mm-hmm. So once they issue a license, the developer will have to pay that $85 million, and then that'll be the money to run the commission. But if they take 2 years to issue a license, you know, their budget's going to get tight quick.
Any word as to the slots license? I know that's the one thing that's kind of pending. We've heard friend George Carney might be in the running for that. Anybody else that might be running in for that particular license?
Yeah, well, right now it looks like Rainham, Taunton, Greyhound Park, Mr. Carney, and then Gary Piantowski at Plain Ridge Racecourse in Plainville. Looks like those are the two that are going to go for the slots license. Plain Ridge has already paid their $400,000 fee, application fee, indicating that they're obviously going to go for the license. Rainham has yet to pay that fee. I guess I'm told they're getting their ducks in a row, and we should probably see something from them in the next couple of weeks. There's a January 15th deadline for application, so, you know, by then we should know who's absolutely in. But that, you know, that's an interesting one, too, because, you know, that could move quicker than the casinos. And that the slots license could actually be the one license that gets the revenue coming into Massachusetts the quickest. Because, you know, January 15th deadline, let's say it's just Rainham and Plain Ridge, they can pick which one they want, and conceivably they should, you know, be able to be up and running with the slots within a few months, I would think.
Okay. Well, we're coming up, we've got about maybe 7 or 8 minutes left. We can't let you go without at least touching on the sports side of Dave Wedge. I'm sure you've been watching the Patriots. I'm sure you've been watching the Celtics. But the first thing I probably should get into, give me your thoughts on Rajon Rondo and the little scuffle he got into the other night with a member of the Brooklyn Nets who doesn't need to be booed any more than Chris Humphreys.
I love when they boo Chris Humphreys. You know, I don't like the way the media has vilified Rajon Rondo, and they've made him out to be this kind of like thuggish punk and you know, stupid, you know, kind of a stupid player. He's not. I mean, he's the heart and soul of that team right now. Paul Pierce is still the best player, in my opinion, but Rajon Rondo, I actually have to say Rajon Rondo is probably all around the best player they have right now, and he's definitely the future of that team. And he's the engine that makes that team go. What happened the other night, I didn't think it was a big deal. I mean, you know, you remember back to those old Celtics teams with Larry Bird and sure. Kevin McHale and Danny Ainge and all them. They fought all the time. There was always scrums going on, and it was common. And I just think that these days they make a big deal out of it, and I don't know why. I mean, I like the fire. I like the spirit. You know, Rajon Rondo didn't like the foul that Humphries put on his player, so he went after the guy. What's wrong with that? You know, I want my players sticking up for each other.
Do you feel so? So you're kind of against the 2-game suspension and probably against the 25.
Yeah, I don't think it was warranted. I mean, he didn't throw a punch. You know, all he did was grab the guy, and you know, we didn't see what really happened at the bottom of the pile. I mean, you know, Chris Humphries sent out a tweet showing all these scratches, saying he was scratched, and where do I get a tetanus shot in Boston and all that. But you know, I mean, anyone that's ever been in a fight knows you get scratched.
You
know what I mean? People grab you, and you get bruises, and you get scratches, and you know, those 10 guys in that thing. You know, how do you pick Rajon Rondo out of that and say he deserves 2 games? And I don't agree with the Chris Humphries one either. You know, I don't think either one of them should have been suspended.
You know, if only basketball players had to endure what hockey players have to when you get a fight on skates, then yeah, they would realize that, you know what, if you're going to do it, make it worth it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a cultural thing, and it's part of the game, and a lot, you know, but there are a lot of NBA fans who make that argument and say that it's racial, that, you know, this stuff goes on times 10 in hockey, and they get standing ovations. And in basketball, when it happens, they get suspended, they get called thugs.
Yeah.
You know, and there is some truth to that, but I think, you know, the same thing happens in baseball and the same thing happens in football. There's just, fighting is not allowed in those sports.
And
when it happens, it results in suspensions. Hockey, it is part of the game.
And more recently in NASCAR as well.
Well, I missed that one. Was there a NASCAR? Oh, the pit crews fought, right?
Well, in Phoenix when Jeff Gordon actually was being punched by members of another crew while there was about a 30-man pile.
The scrum.
It was it was actually quite the fight that lasted quite some time, and it landed in no suspensions, but there was quite a bit of money that was in fees.
I'm waiting for a Happy Gilmore type to come along and start a fight on the PGA Tour. That's what I'm
saying. How do you feel about the Celtics being 9-8? It seems as though they don't have an identity. The defense isn't there. It seems that they're letting teams hang around. How do you feel about the Celtics team right now? Is it too early to worry about them?
I think it is, but I'm you know, but it's getting to the point where it's starting to become a concern. Where you're like, you know, where's this team going? Are they a 500 team, or are they really, you know, are they going to challenge for the conference championship? With the talent they have, they should be at the top of the East. But you know, they go out, they beat San Antonio in really impressive fashion, and then they lose to the Nets, and then, you know, then they struggle against, you know, they struggle against the Milwaukees of the world, and you know, the Grizzlies and teams like that. And I can't really figure it out. All I can think of is that it's just taking a little more time for the team to gel than it should. But I think down the road, their depth is going to carry them. You know, they've got they can play 10 players, and there aren't too many teams that can do that. You know, and I'm a little concerned Courtney Lee hasn't really been doing much. But, you know, if you saw Jeff Green starting to play now, that's a good sign. Chris Wilcox is playing well. So I like, you know me, Kevin. I'm a diehard. I like him, and I trust Doc. I think he'll get him going. And I think the second half of the year, I think they'll catch fire, and they'll be a tough team to beat.
Yeah, we haven't thrown the X factor in there either, the defense of Avery Bradley.
Yeah, Avery Bradley's still out, you know. So when he comes back, you're talking 11. You know, you get 11 guys that can play. And that's 11 guys. You know, 4 or 5 of those guys on the bench would start on most teams.
Sure.
You know, a guy like Jason Terry, Avery Bradley, Leandro Barboza, you know, Jeff Green. Those guys are all starters on most teams. So, I think when it comes together, they're going to be the team no one wants to see in the playoffs. That's for sure.
All right. Well, Dave Wedge, I got to thank you for joining us. If folks want to, give you a little bit of a tip as far as the story goes, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. I mean, I'm on Facebook. People can grab me on there. It's facebook.com/DaveWedge. Or you can follow me on Twitter @DaveWedge. Or you can get me dwedge@bostonherald.com.
That's right. Wedge. Dave Wedge. Don't forget the name.
That's
Dave.
Right.
We'll look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks, my friend.
All right, Kevin, you have a great week.
You as well, my friend.
Take care.
See you, Dave.
And that's it for Monday Night Talk. We are out of here. I believe South Shore Live might be creeping in any moment, but until next week, have yourself a great night.
Gonna wrap up this show right after this.
I want to thank Sutton the Headland. I'm sorry.
Do you have any parting words?
My only parting words would be, great to listen to radio, but you should read a book once in a while, too.
See what it is? People don't want to talk to you anymore.
You don't care.
I gotta go.
Good night.
Good night.